Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 25th. And in this first segment of this hour, we will hear from a critic of using animals in medical research. Coming up after 7:30, a supporter of it. With our two guests this hour, we will be accepting your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our two guests will be facing off tomorrow night in a debate at the Wisconsin Historical Society in Madison. I said earlier it was tonight. It's tomorrow night. They will be debating the benefits and or harms of using animals in research. The debate is free, open to the public, and all of that. But if you can't make it, you can ask your question here or state your own view on whether or not you think animals should be used in testing, medical research. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We start with Dr. Ray Greek. He is president of Americans for Medical Advancement. He's also a retired anesthesiologist and author of several books, including Sacred Cows and Golden Geese, The Human Cost of Experiments on Animals, and Specious Science, How Genetics and Evolution Reveal Why Medical Research on Animals Harms Humans, and What Will We Do If We Don't Experiment on Animals? And he joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So you're a medical doctor, and you don't believe in animal research for medical reasons.
For medical reasons that are human-oriented, usually the arguments that one hears against animal testing and animal-based research are ethical arguments from an animal's perspective. Americans for Medical Advancement does not have any ethical issues whatsoever with testing on animals or doing research on animals. And indeed, there are areas of animal experimentation and animal research that we support. What we do not support is the concept that you can test on an animal and find out what that drug or disease is going to do in humans.
Yeah, you can't find this out by testing in animals? Why do you say that?
Because all of the studies that have been done in the scientific literature support that view. And if you think about it, it's really just common sense. Evolutionary biology tells us that very small differences between the genetic makeup of one species and another lead to, in our case, being humans, and in the case of rodents, being a mouse or a rat or whatever. Mice have roughly 30,000 genes, as do humans. We actually have the exact same genes, except for roughly 300 that the mouse has that are involved in the sense of smell that we don't have. The difference between us and the mouse is how those genes are turned on and expressed, or we would say how those genes are regulated. The example I like to use is of a piano. Every piano has the exact same keyboard, but you may use your piano to play Bach or Brahms or Beethoven, and I may use mine to play Ray Charles. Mm-hmm. Now, those are two very different outcomes, but they come from the exact same keyboard. The keyboard is like our genes. We have roughly the same genes as mice. But how those genes are expressed means that the mouse grows a tail, and even though we have the gene for growing a tail, it's not expressed, so we don't grow a tail.
Yeah, so you're saying that all of the research that's being done using animals to, I don't know, test a particular pharmaceutical drug or to experiment on some sort of medical procedure, that this is, it's all useless? It's being done for naught?
To say that it's useless is probably a sweeping generalization. I can say that it's not predictive. And there are many examples, many famous examples, actually, of drugs that either harmed animals and went on to help humans, or vice versa. In fact, Science magazine in the late 1990s quoted the National Cancer Institute as saying that they have probably lost cures for cancer because they were either ineffective or too toxic for mice.
So you're saying find out if the mouse died, they wouldn't go any further with this.
That's correct. And our position is that that is simply scientifically untenable, because just because one animal reacts one way to a certain drug has no meaning in terms of how another species will react If you take 10 different species, you'll probably get 7 or 8 different reactions. Mm-hmm. And even if the drug kills all 10 species of animals, again, that drug may be a cure for cancer in humans because there's just no correlation. So when you say that animal experimentation or animal-based research is useless, that's not our position. You can certainly do basic science research and learn a lot of things. For example, the fruit fly is a very commonly used animal for genetics research, and we have learned a lot about genetics from using the fruit fly. So that sort of thing works, and it works very well. But how animal-based research is usually sold to the public is, we're going to make your drug supply safer, we're going to find a cure for AIDS, we're going to find out how cancer works, you know, how the cellular changes happen. And that we have a long history of failure when using animals for that particular purpose.
Yeah, besides the example that we maybe would have had a cure for cancer if the mouse didn't die, how else has using animals in research hurt humans?
Well, probably one of the more recent examples was in England approximately, I think, 6, 8, 10 months ago. There was an experimental drug that was called TGN-1412. And this drug had passed animal studies on multiple species, was deemed safe. It was then tested in 6 human volunteers in England, all of whom went to the intensive care unit and almost died. And they were given a very, very small dose of the drug, again, based on studies in animals that said this particular dose was safe. And there are, if you'll read either of our books, Sacred Cows or Specious Science, we have literally hundreds of examples. Another example would be cigarette smoking. For decades, people doubted that cigarette smoking caused lung cancer. And the reason for that was because they could not induce lung cancer in rodents. And indeed, it's still very difficult to induce lung cancer from cigarette smoke in animals in general.
We are talking with Dr. Ray Greek. He is president of Americans for Medical Advancement. He is going to be arguing against using animals in medical research during a debate tomorrow night in Madison. We welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 25th. Coming up this afternoon, after 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, Gene Faraca talks with legendary American folk singer and activist Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger on with Gene Faraca this afternoon after 3 o'clock. We're talking with Dr. Ray Greek. He's in Madison for a debate tomorrow night at the Wisconsin Historical Society building. It's at 7 o'clock. It's free and open to the public. He will be debating Eric Sandgren, who is acting director of the Research Animal Resource Center on the UW-Madison campus. We will be talking with Eric Sandgren coming up after 7:30. Dr. Ray Greek is the president of Americans for Medical Advancement. He opposes the use of animals in testing or medical research, not for ethical reasons for the animal, but because he says that such testing can hurt humans, that it doesn't produce the right medical result for humans. Is that pretty much it in a nutshell, why you oppose the animal testing, Dr. Greek?
In a nutshell, yes, that's correct. We just don't think that, again, based on the scientific literature, people certainly should not just take our word for this type of thing. They shouldn't take anybody's word for scientific studies and so forth. But if somebody does look at the scientific literature and look at the medical literature, it's pretty clear cut. You cannot predict what a drug is going to do in a human being based on what that drug did in a mouse or a rat or a monkey.
Yeah, so what should be done instead? You mentioned this example where a drug was deemed safe after animal testing, but then humans got sick when they took it. What do you just give it to the human first and see if we become sick or not?
Well, there's two questions in that. Number one, what can we do to make drugs safe for human beings? And that's a very legitimate question. The second question is, does testing on animals do anything to make drugs safe? Now, if the animal testing phase, and there's several phases of drug testing, some on animals, some on test tubes, petri dishes, and finally on human beings, you have to look at that whole process and say, okay, which of these phases work? And the animal testing phase simply does not give us reliable information. Therefore, regardless of what else can be done or what else is being done, you should get rid of that modality because it actually hinders you. It prevents good drugs from coming to market, like I said, the National Cancer Institute, and it does not prevent bad drugs from coming to the market. And even if you look at it statistically, you're better off just to get rid of that particular modality. Now, the other part of the question is, well, what will we do if we don't test on animals? And there's a lot of things that we can do, and there's a lot of things that we are doing. One thing that we can do is actually give nanogram quantities of a drug to a human being and then watch what that drug does through a PET scanner and using a mass spec to draw a blood sample, put it into the mass spec, and see if there's been any damage to the body from that nanogram quantity of drug. That is a very safe and effective way of testing drugs on humans. And indeed, this is being done currently. The mass spec that was invented for this has only been around for about 5 or 6 years. It's called microdosing. And it's the FDA recently sent out a letter saying that they would actually accept this form of testing instead of animal testing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to be talking with Eric Sandgren coming up after 7:30. And it seems to me when I've talked to him in the past, and I can't remember specific examples, but he's just said that sometimes a question that needs to be answered can only be answered with the use of an animal in this kind of medical research.
Well, certainly there are tests and procedures that we do on animals that we cannot do on humans. That's a given. I'm not questioning that. What I'm questioning is the results that you get when you, for example, do invasive neuroscience research on monkeys. What do those results give you in terms of their predictive value for humans? And again, if you look at the scientific literature, if you read the studies, the predictive value is nil. Now, that does not mean that occasionally an animal will not react to a drug or disease the same way as a human, but you can only know that in retrospect. So if you read these animal studies closely, what you'll find with a lot of them is they will describe what they did, and in their conclusion, they will say, and this mimicked what we saw in humans. Well, that's fine if you're trying to establish that this particular animal does something the same way that a human does it, but in terms of its predictive value, retrospective prediction is an oxymoron. And that's what a lot of these studies are trying to do, is they're trying to say, we showed this, this is exactly what we saw in humans, therefore the animal predicted the human response. That's nonsense.
Mm. I have a brother and know other people who are alive today because of an organ transplant. And I'm wondering if we didn't need to test this on animals. Would my brother be alive today if we didn't test this on animals first?
Who do you think the first species was to have an organ transplant?
I don't know. A pig.
Human.
Okay.
The first kidney transplant, I should say, was done in Boston, and it was a twin. Identical twins, one twin gave the other twin the kidney. And a lot of people think that, well, we must have worked out transplants on rats and dogs and mice and monkeys. And in fact, it was just as I was saying previously, we worked out transplants on humans. And if you look at a lot of the great advances in medicine, they were first conceived in humans, they were practiced on humans, it was worked out in humans, and only later did we go to the dog lab or the rat lab or the monkey lab and try to reproduce those results in animals? Now, that's a scary thought for a lot of people, but that is the reality of medical research, yeah. At least historically.
You had mentioned that you're not opposed to all animal research. What animal research do you think is worthwhile?
There's roughly 9 ways that animals can be used in science, and we're opposed to 2 of the 9. One way that animals can be successfully used is to test drugs and work out operating procedures for other animals. For example, if you want to find cures for osteosarcomas of Great Danes, mm-hmm. then certainly you should study osteosarcomas in Great Danes. You should not, however, study osteosarcomas in another breed of dog, and certainly not in a cat, because even within various breeds of dogs, you'll find that some are more predisposed to one type of cancer than another. A cure that works in one type of animal may not work in another type of animal, and so on and so on. And again, as I talked about earlier, so-called basic science research, for example, research that just looks at what does this physiologic process do? Where does this come from? A lot of the great advances in cellular biology came from studying cells, regardless of where that cell came from. Does that make sense?
Let me bring in a caller since we're coming up on the news break. Jillian in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. And thank you, Joy, for having this excellent program. It's really, really good to be able to hear an intelligent, knowledgeable position on this, because what we have going mostly is a lot of secretive. We don't hear from the university what really is going on, and we just need to know these things. I think the public would be probably much better informed if we had more programs like this. I just want to make a comment or two. I certainly appreciate the scientific viewpoint that Dr. Greek is presenting. And just as a matter of interest, I was one of the first people as an RN to look after some of the first kidney transplants done in this country back in mm-hmm. 1961. But my position is, not only do I think that what Dr. Greek is saying is extremely interesting and probably much more informative than most people know, but I think it's terribly immoral and unethical to be using animals in any way that we're using them. And I particularly am appalled at what's being done here at the university in the Primate Center. And I just want to quote Gandhi. His quote, "The greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated." And that, to me, says it very succinctly.
Comment, Dr. Creek?
Well, I think there's two issues here. One is the ethical issue, and one is the scientific issue. It's kind of like abortion. Certainly, there's a division of opinion in this country on the ethics of abortion. However, the scientific aspects of abortion are pretty clear-cut. Yes, abortion is feasible. Yes, medically it can be done, and so on and so forth. And again, what I focus on is not the ethics of using animals as human surrogates, but rather the scientific viability. What works, what doesn't. If this doesn't work, then there's no reason to have a big ethical discussion about it. We should get rid of it. If it's counterproductive, if it's harming humans, there's no reason to do it. If it does work, then we can have an ethical discussion about whether we should do it, and so on and so on. But I think for a long time, society has put the cart before the horse.
And we'll leave it there because we're at the end of this half hour. Dr. Ray Greek, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Dr. Ray Greek, president of Americans for Medical Advancement. He is the author of several books, including Sacred Cows and Golden Geese, Specious Science, and What Will We Do If We Don't Experiment on Animals? And it says here that Dr. Greek will be participating in a talk and book signing at Barnes & Noble in Madison. That would be tonight, and tomorrow night, the debate. We'll get another side of this issue coming up after the news. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Tuesday, September the 25th. The debate over animal testing will take to the stage tomorrow night in Madison when a critic or opponent of using animals in research or medical tests will be taking on an animal researcher and a director at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The debate is set for tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Wisconsin Historical Society building. But this hour, we are hearing from both of the debaters separately, and we continue to welcome your thoughts and questions on this issue. Should animals be used in medical testing? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We heard from Dr. Ray Greek in our first half hour, who says experiments on animals do not help humans, and in cases he said it harms humans. Now we will hear from Dr. Eric Sandgren, who disagrees. And Dr. Eric Sandgren is acting director of the Research Animal Resource Center, the Research Animal Resource Center, and associate professor of experimental pathology at UW-Madison. And I'm sorry, are you a Dr. Sandgren, Dr. Sandgren?
I'm a veterinarian and I have a PhD.
There you go. You're a doctor in both senses.
Yes.
I didn't have that here. You heard Dr. Greek. He says he opposes animals being used in medical testing, not for ethical reasons pertaining to the animal, but because he said medically or scientifically, the results don't help humans. What's your response to that?
First, I'd like to emphasize some of the similarities that he and I have. He did mention that there are 9 ways, according to him, that animals can be used, and that he and his group do not scientifically or medically oppose 7 of those. So really, he's focusing on the use of animals as models for humans, and that includes the use of animals as a way to test drugs. And I guess I'd characterize our approach there, our different approaches there, is by saying that we look at the same set of facts. We both recognize that there are differences between animals and humans. We both recognize that there are similarities between animals and humans. And he concludes that the differences make it impossible to use animals, whereas I conclude that the similarities, and I've seen this, make it in many cases, not always, but in many cases, very useful to use animals. I don't know if the glass half full, half empty is quite the right analogy, but I think that really is how each of us is approaching this, from a same set of data, but drawing very different conclusions.
Yeah, I guess so. What about some of the examples he brought up? A particular drug was tested on animals, deemed safe with the animals. Then humans took it and they got sick.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'd first comment on how many drugs are tested on animals, used by humans, and prove them to be safe, by far the vast majority. But there are cases where a drug can cause injury in humans, and it has been tested on animals. There are a lot of reasons for that. In some cases, the reasons that he brings up, though, that there are significant differences between species, will be a factor. But in other cases, something else he brings up in a different context is that humans themselves aren't the same. And oftentimes a failed drug, what we call a failed drug, works on 99.999% of the people, but a very small fraction will have a very serious side effect. That may be because they have pre-existing disease. That may be because they're taking other medications and this interacts with it. So I think you have to be careful when you say things like animal research allows drugs to pass up through into human use and then hurts humans, when we're really talking maybe 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000 people that have an idiosyncratic reaction. Dr. Greek's alternative is to, as he mentioned, abandon the use of animals. And basically then the only option you have is to test every drug on every human, because again, he's emphasizing the differences even between humans. And as a scientist and somebody involved in biomedical research, I'm not going to give up on trying to help people in a way that's effective, because obviously it would be literally impossible to test every drug on every human. Yeah. Your doorbell would be ringing every day and the drug company would say, here's the 20 compounds we want you to test today. I don't think anybody would put up with that.
I don't want to speak for the animal rights community, but I would also suspect that the testing of a particular medication on an animal may not be on the top of the list of the experiments that really irritate or anger the animal rights community. He said also that it's the invasive neuroscience experiments on, for example, monkeys that he also opposes because the research shows, the studies show that the predictive value of this is nil. And I wonder if you can explain that.
I can address it. So that is another example. He's using that as an example of an animal as a model for human. And that is one of the uses that he does not consider appropriate because, as you just mentioned, he does not think that's predictive. But it's funny he would use that example because on this campus there are scientists that are studying actually both rhesus monkeys and humans and looking at issues like rage and depression. Depression is one of the most common diseases in the human population. They're using very advanced methodology. Some of it's invasive, but some of it is not invasive at all. Much of it involves imaging in both species. And the predictive value has been exceptionally high. So I think, again, when you're dealing with different species, you'll find differences sometimes. The studies that are being done here are finding dramatic similarities and, in fact, being used then to examine how some of these drugs that have been given to people with depression for so long work, because we often don't even know. So I guess my response is that you choose the data set, I guess, that you want to look at and then make your arguments based on that. I prefer to try to look at all the data sets and realize that while there are differences, there are also similarities, and that is the job of the scientist, to understand when a certain piece of work will not be appropriate because the match between the human and the animal just simply isn't high enough.
Yeah. So tell us, Dr. Sandgren, why the research that is currently being done at the Research Animal Resource Center at UW-Madison, why it is so important that animal research continue?
So first, a minor correction. The Research Animal Resource Center is actually the administrative unit that oversees research on campus. So we are charged with making certain that all laws are followed and making certain that the research that is done is approved prior to its being done by the appropriate animal care and use committees.
You chair committees that will look at a proposed experiment and determine whether this indeed is a critical experiment
to
conduct.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. So more generally, the research that's done on campus, there are many different objectives. And among those objectives are those that Dr. Greek believes are scientifically and medically acceptable, knowledge for knowledge sake. Using these animal studies as a way to generate new ideas. And certainly, with a veterinary school here, developing treatments for dogs based on studies in dogs. So those are all part of what goes on. In fact, a very large part. But there are some studies where we do try to model human diseases. And both the advantage and the disadvantage of using animal systems, and this is true for using the human in studies, is that the systems are so complex, but that's where disease exists in an organism. A disease does not exist in a test tube or a culture dish, although you can use those methods to study disease. So again, for some studies, you need a whole animal with all of the feedback mechanisms, with all of the complexity, in order to answer your question. And then your responsibility as a scientist, if you are using those studies as a means to try to identify something about humans, your responsibility as a scientist is to determine in what way and how far you can carry that data into human populations.
We are talking with Dr. Eric Sandgren. He is director. He's not acting director. He's director of director of the Research Animal Resource Center, an associate professor of experimental pathology at UW-Madison. He is one of the scientists who will be debating another scientist tomorrow night at the Wisconsin Historical Society building at 7 o'clock, free and open to the public, debating the issue of using animals in research. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about this issue, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'll talk with a psychologist who says we have blind spots, and those blind spots cause us, otherwise smart people, to do dumb things. So we'll find out more about that after 8. We're talking with one side of the debate over using animals in medical research, and we are welcoming your questions and comments for Dr. Eric Sandgren. We did get an email from Bonnie in Madison who wants to know what are some of the things done to non-human animals to test pain medications. I was given a prescription for a pain medication after breaking my collarbone, which was painful, but when I looked up to see how it was tested, I see that it was tested on cats being subjected to a great deal of pain. Can you address that, Dr. Sandgren?
My specialty area is not the study of pain research, although there are some studies on this campus that are directly or indirectly involved with studying pain. And most of the studies of pain actually are relatively mild studies where, for example, the time it takes a rodent to move its foot from a warm plate is measured. And if an animal is given analgesia, that time is extended because it is not feeling the pain as much. That's the kind of pain study that I'm familiar with. I don't really know what specifically was done for this medication in the cat. Mm-hmm. One of the things I can say, though, because I have the veterinary background, is that the study of pain and its medication is a great example of where you do need to take into account the species difference. You can translate information from one species to another, but you need to do so cautiously. And so that within the vast range of species we deal with in veterinary medicine, there are remarkable differences in how we treat those animals. And that's been discovered through work on animals. Some of that also has been translated then to humans. In those cases where an animal and a human have similar responses, you can use the information from animals. But with respect to the specific tests, I guess I would need more information to address that.
But we do. You're in general, you're an advocate of testing. If testing a pain medication on an animal, presumably, you have to see if that's taking away the animal's pain in order to see if it's effective. So there has to be some sort of pain that animal is going through.
Yes, and the same would be true if you're testing a medication on humans. You would have to, if you eliminate animal studies, then, as I mentioned earlier, and as Dr. Greek really is favoring, you'd have to test medications on humans. So you would find then someone with a particularly painful undergoing a particularly painful experience and use that person to test multiple medications on. That is the most direct way to identify something that will work on that human, at least, certainly. But generally, as a society, we've decided that is not the kind of experiment that we are going to allow. There are boards that oversee the use of animals in research. There are boards that oversee the use of humans in research. And I don't see those boards approving studies where humans are subjected to pain and then treated to find out what is the best medicine for a human. Yeah.
Frank in Fort Atkinson is with us. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I've noted that Doctor has a couple times said that he looks at his data and draws one conclusion, and the guest you had on in the first half of the hour looks at his data and draws another conclusion. I'm kind of wondering, where does science come into this? I thought science was about making a hypothesis, doing experiments to gather observations, measuring the data, and seeing whether or not the data confirms a hypothesis. It seems to me that either both of these doctors don't really take a serious look at each other's sources of data, or both of these doctors are working with a very thin set of data from which it is difficult to draw conclusions, and that greater research needs to be done on both sides. Can you please have your guest explain why is it that this is being billed as, well, just a difference of opinion when it should be science?
Okay.
Well, that's a wonderful question, and I think each of us, myself and Dr. Greek, would answer that in a different way. We are looking, by and large, at an overlapping set of data. And this is solid data, and then drawing conclusions. And I mean, your question really is, why is that? My perspective is that when he is looking at that data, he is misinterpreting how those experiments were done and how they should be interpreted. What we should take from them. I suspect he would claim the same thing about me. I disagree with the interpretations that he reaches from that data. I see a very different outcome. So I think it really, I was using the term coming up with different conclusions, and I think that's really precisely correct. I believe that he is misrepresenting the data, or at least skewing it in a very extreme sense. And I'm sure this will be something that comes up in more detail tomorrow night at the debate. So I was putting it less strongly earlier. Now I'm putting it very strongly.
Well, I guess you asked the right question, Frank. Oh, he's not there anymore. Are you there, Frank? Oh, I guess not. Barbara in Hilder. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning. It's very nice to have this topic discussed. I've been a long time. I grew up on a farm. I'm a hunter. I have different views. Animal lover on one hand, understander. I'm in the healthcare field, so I really have a different perspective on things. I understand that, you know, we have to have research to take care of people and get these solutions to our healthcare problems. Wonderful discussion today. My question is, you know, we have a limited resource of animals. That we're doing this research on. How many would you say that are in your lab, you know, you do maybe, I'm guessing, let's say there's 100 in your lab right now that you're doing research on, just an estimate. This mm-hmm. is my hypothesis on this. You had said earlier that, you know, if we had to do a research on humans, we'd have to go, they'd be ringing our doorbells day and night every time they needed to do an experiment on a medicine. I think that is, in and of itself, is a misrepresentation. I think, you know, I think that's breeding fear among people. To me, you know, you're doing an experiment on a few animals. You don't go out and do a medical experiment on every mouse in the entire world to make sure that a medicine works. So you're not going to go out and do an experiment on every human being. You're not going to have every drug tested on every human being. So I think that's a misrepresentation. The other thing is, you know,
well, I don't know if you said every human being would be tested,
well,
but that every drug
would be ringing everybody's doorbell, and nobody would be happy with that. So I think that's, you know, that's a misrepresentation, and that's kind of a way of breeding fear among people and kind of skewing their perspective on this.
Let's get a response from Dr. You might have another point, Barbara, but let me make sure that Dr. Sandgren can reply to that at least before we run out of time.
Sure. Yeah, and actually, I'm taking that directly from Dr. Greek's website, where he states over and over again that animals are different than humans, and in fact, humans are different than each other, and that in fact, identical twins will respond differently. So if you carry his arguments to their logical conclusion, you'd have to test every drug on every person. But that's not something I'm advocating. I'm certainly not using that to try to, as a scare tactic. I agree with you you can use subsets of individuals, whether it's humans or animals, mm-hmm. to learn more broadly about a population. My statement just had to do with what is on his website and the statements that he is making, where he's emphasizing the differences between organisms to the extent that he'll even call identical twins different.
Yeah. Barbara, thank you for the call. Linda in Pewaukee, I need you to be very brief. We're almost out of time.
Hello. Yes? I will try and be very brief. I attended the University of Madison in the early 70s and toured the primate lab as a student of psychology there. We saw some of the, I guess, remnants of Harry Harlow's experiments. I really thought they were at best pointless and at worst fiendish. And I was wondering if he is still touted, if any of those experiments are being still done.
Yeah, we have less than a minute.
I can answer that in less than a minute. No, those kinds of experiments are not being done now because the information that they did provide, we already have. We don't need to repeat that. And probably almost certainly those experiments would not be allowed now, given the perspective that the animal care and use committees take. However, it was very influential research in its time. But no, that kind of work is not being done anymore.
The debate will continue tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Wisconsin Historical Society building in Madison. Dr. Eric Sandgren, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Eric Sandgren, director of the Research Animal Resource Center, associate professor of experimental pathology at UW-Madison. Thanks to Leo Duranda and to Christina Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.